Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp. I'm with Ben Golliver here at Vegas Summer League. We got Chris Haynes from ESPN sitting with us at the Thomas and Mack Center. What's going on?
Not too much, Andrew. We are in a little glass box, VIP style, because we're rolling with Chris Haynes. Now, Chris is a guy who I first met up in the upper deck bleachers media section at what used to be called the Rose Gardens, now the Moda Center. I don't even remember all your stops, but your first big break was CSNNW, yep. Blazers Insider. You took that, you parlayed that to Cleveland.com, covering the Cavaliers, LeBron James return title. Then you parlayed that to Golden State Warriors coverage. And just kind of all-around NBA newsbreaker, right? So thanks for joining us. We want to dig into all sorts of stuff. Unfortunately, that brings us to Gordon Hayward.
Yeah. How was your 4th of July, Chris? Just a casual barbecue?
It was, it had its peaks and its valleys.
No kidding.
I'll just say that.
Let's set the stakes first, because Hayward, going back months, I mean, even back to last summer, it was pretty clear he was going to be the top of the free agent leaderboard. Him, guys like Blake Griffin, pretty much those were the guys who might move, some of the biggest names. When did you first start hearing, like, Celtics chatter, right? Because there's a story, I'm sure, when did you even start working on it? Probably 6 months before he made his decision, right?
Not that long. When I was covering the playoff, Warriors-Jazz,
mm-hmm.
I was hearing from people in the arena, people well plugged in, like, this is the last that Jazz has seen of Gordon Hayward.
Yeah.
Like, the Warriors had just swept them, you know, on their own court. And it was like, keep eye on that.
Well,
like,
I mean, even that game four, when it was Warriors-Jazz, the Utah fans acted like it was his last game.
No,
it was like emotional.
Yeah, they gave him a standing ovation.
Yeah.
It was like, it was as if they knew,
yeah,
like he was gone. Yeah. And so, and now, like I said, I was hearing, that's when I first started hearing, like, man, it was real. I've always heard, like, rumors. But when I started hearing from plugged-in people there, I was like, okay, so let me keep an eye out on this. And you guys know Mark Bonestein. That's Gordon Hayward's agent.
Mm-hmm.
Great. He's a great guy, man. He's a great guy. He really doesn't let too much leak. He tends to break his own news on his Twitter account.
Yeah. Everything was going on, people were like, oh, he's an A-class guy. You know, he's A1 guy. He's going to, you know, this isn't weird. This isn't like games being played. This is just Mark, you know.
But, Ben, he still is. Like,
yeah.
But I knew going into this free agency that you aren't getting anything really from Hayward's camp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to work some back channels to put myself in position to be able to, you know, to be able to break it.
Yeah, and one thing I said to Sharp earlier is that personality-wise, Hayward's kind of on the verge of being this kind of like star player, all-star type guy, but personality-wise, he's not this big magnetic guy, right? Like, during the playoffs, he's up on the podium, he's being bland, he's being boring. This isn't Draymond Green, right? So, again, he's probably not a guy you can necessarily go to and expect to work as a source either, right? Like, guys, like,
yeah,
in your situation or other reporters are just like, we're not going to get it from him directly.
No doubt. You're not getting it from him, and I'm 90% sure you're not getting it from Bartlestein.
Right.
Particularly when the whole plan was designed for...
Well, on this one, you could tell there was like a rollout strategy and everything had been planned to a T. And then you came through and threw a curveball.
Yeah, look, so this is what happened. So I was in Bristol doing SportsCenter for like the last 5 days. And I was just about to board a plane to go back to the Bay. So as I'm we're playing that morning, I'm hearing, man, Hayward to Boston, Hayward,
yeah,
to Boston. I even said on SportsCenter that morning, I'm hearing that Celtics people, you know, within the Celtics organization feel real pretty good about their chances. So I'm hearing all this, but the afternoon, right as I'm about to, get to the airport, I get a call. The call said he's going to Boston.
100%.
100%. He's going to Boston. I'm like, you sure? He said, Haynes, he's going to Boston. this is a guy that I trust, guy that I've known for years, attacking that on with the other people that I've talked to,
yeah,
leading up to that. And this is what else he said. He said, you better hurry up, because he's probably in the next 30 minutes, or probably even any minute, is going to publish.
Imminent.
Yeah. His
on the Players Tribune.
On the Tribune.
Yeah, so that's a pretty common too. Like, sometimes people get this, sometimes they don't, right? News will get out right beforehand, and the teams usually are trying to, not necessarily in free agency, but with trades, sometimes the teams want to be out there quickly. But for free agency, because it's kind of a moratorium and all that, the players want to be the first ones to get out there because they want all the clicks. They want all the page views. And in this case, he made a financial deal with the Players Tribune, correct?
Ooh, financial deal. I mean, I can't confirm that. Yeah, those are some of the rumors.
It certainly appears that way.
I can't confirm all that.
Right. So, all right, take me through, because I mean, this the news breaking side of journalism is foreign to me. So, like, you're in Bristol. Did you end up not boarding the flight? I assume.
I asked my boss, did I need to stay?
Yeah.
And initially they was like, no, you're good. Go ahead. We'll take care of this. Then as I'm about to board the plane, I got a call back. Hey, can you stay? And I'm already set up. Like I had my oldest daughter with me at the time. And I kind of already told her, look, you can get, you know, she had a recital the next day. So I already promised her to go. So I boarded the flight and I had a layover in Chicago. So okay. I was on the flight for 2 hours. Not knowing what's going on.
So you didn't have Wi-Fi even?
I had it, but I wasn't too interested in checking it out at that time.
Okay, so let's go.
Had you already broken it?
I already broke it.
So let's go back to the sourcing thing, though. So you had the source. It was rock solid. There was no doubt in your mind, right?
No doubt.
So when you're sending that tweet out, it's like, to you, that's just word is bond, it's done.
Yeah.
So how long after you sent that do the people start doubting your credibility? Or because there was initially reports that were all confirming your report, correct?
Yep.
So when did the backlash come?
The backlash came when Mark Barlstein reached out to certain individuals refute my story.
Did he reach out to you?
No, he didn't reach out to me.
Did you reach out to him?
No. And I mean, we can talk about this later, but the next day I did reach out to Barlstein. He picked up. We spoke for about 5 or 6 minutes. I told him that the only thing I'm going to apologize to you about is that I probably should have called you to let you know I was dropping this.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to not report it.
Yeah.
It was going out.
Yeah.
Like, I trusted that. It didn't matter what he said. But I think from my experiences with him, he's always been fair to me.
Yeah.
I felt like I at least owed him a heads up.
But at the same time, you felt like you were on the clock, right? Like
that's true.
If you're calling him, somebody else is tweeting the same news, potentially, right?
Exactly. And everybody, you know, everybody is on to this story. This is arguably the biggest story.
It was the biggest story of the summer.
Yeah, you can make an argument. So, I was up against it right there. That's why I went with it when I had it.
All right, so then you get off the plane in Chicago. Check your mentions. Your phone is probably just melting from the heat coming from Boston.
I'm seeing all these mentions about... You know, leave the scoops to somebody else. You hack, you premature. He hasn't. What you gotta say about such and such reporting that you're wrong? And you know, you got people in the industry that got these blue check marks, man. That's going taking shots at you.
It was crazy.
Yeah, man. Well, I wish they would have cut in my face with that bull, but but yeah, you got those people, and I'm like, I have my Hulk Hogan. You know, earshot picture, ready.
You had it ready.
Cocked and loaded.
So it was on deck, huh?
It was on deck.
Okay.
In the draft.
But let me ask you, though, at was there any point, because there was a couple minutes where I was just sitting there scrolling through things, and there were reports that, like, now Gordon is rethinking everything. This has changed things.
Well, let me say too,
did any of that hold water with you?
Because none of that.
Well, because as it was unfolding, I'm sitting there like, and you know, I consider you a friend, and I'm thinking, I really hope something doesn't go sideways on this story because now Chris is hanging out to dry, right? Did you ever feel that fear?
The only thing that I felt a little nervous about was the fact that, man, I'm like, damn, is my report going to cause this guy to change his whole plan? Like, am I that powerful? Is it that powerful for him to go say, you know what? Forget Boston. Let's just stay another 4 or 5 years.
Thanks, Utah. I'm back.
You know what I'm saying? But I was calling my guys, my sources. I was like, look, man, I'm on the rotisserie out here. Like, y'all, you sure? It was like, dude, you just got to take the heat.
Yeah.
You just got to take the heat.
But you're going
to come out all right. And so all that stuff, reports about this guy rethinking and all that crap, man, no, I didn't believe none of that.
Well, okay, I got one more question on that.
And it wasn't true.
So, and I know this is like sort of dicey territory, but part of the issue, I think, why people were coming at you was because ESPN, Chris Haynes reports it's done. ESPN, somebody else reports Bartlestein says it's not done. Uh-huh. So you're at this situation where you get the same company, theoretically, with two reports that are contradictory. And so that pits you against one of your coworkers, or it makes ESPN look, I don't know, disjointed or disorganized or something. I mean, what's your view on that side of it?
See, now, the thing is, I don't know how ESPN felt about it. My thing was, it didn't matter who was reporting anything contrary to what I was reporting. It didn't matter who it was.
Yeah.
I felt confident with my sources. Yeah. I felt confident with the people I spoke with. I trusted my reporting. I left my tweet up there. I didn't change. My whole thing was, I'm not going out there on Twitter fighting with everybody. And
that was definitely the right way.
Yeah, I'm not doing that, man. Like, I'm gonna see. I didn't know the thing I didn't know was, like, is his camp going to now hold off another day?
Yeah. Yeah.
To pull off the illusion that they're still thinking.
They never made a decision.
That was my only little concern. I'm like, damn, I gotta wait this out another day. But aside from that, man, it really didn't care who was saying otherwise, man. I felt good about my thing, and I was sticking to it.
Well, so we've only known each other for about 15 minutes.
That's cool.
I like you. I like you. I'm glad you got it right.
He already likes you more than he likes me.
Yeah. I've had enough of Golliver this season. I'm ready for some new blood. But can you recognize how hilarious it would have been if your report had single-handedly changed Gordon Hayward's mind?
But,
and it screwed the Celtics out of a free agent.
But check it out.
Because I was sitting there being like, holy shit, this guy really might do it.
And I saw some tweets of Celtic fans hitting me up. Like, dude, you bet not have hit this too soon, and now it's going back to Utah. But you know what? I was like, guys, I was like, I felt like, look, I don't work for Bartlestein. I don't work for Hayward. I don't work for neither of the three teams that was in the contention. That's my job, man, to report, man. And the thing about it is, if you're getting information from the agent,
right,
getting it from Gordon Hayward, then when you put it out, or the team, then when you put it out, you're not going to receive any type of backlash.
Yeah.
Because they expect it to go out.
Yeah.
Because they know. I didn't get it from any of those.
And sometimes guys will hand you stuff.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I didn't get it from anyone. Remember I said, Bartlestein, it's really difficult to break a Bartlestein transaction. So I prepared myself ahead of time to get myself penetrate some other key guys that are in the know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew, if I was able to get the word from key people that I trust, that if I put it out, it probably will come with some backlash. And I was prepared to do that because I knew some people might try to, do what they did.
So let me ask you this. When you see all these confirmations come out right after your report,
I thought it was over.
And then you start to see everybody run backwards. They're doing the rewind.
I thought it was over.
They're doing the rewind dance, and they're saying, "Oh no, no, we're taking it all back."
Yeah.
And what? So from your perspective, did those other people independently report the story? Do you think accurately with their own sources, or do you feel like sometimes people are just jumping to jump and say, "Hey, we got it too"?
Look, I honestly don't know, Ben, and it would be unfair to me to say that they did this, but what I will say is, if you're reporting something this year, and even if you're confirming, you're reporting.
Yeah.
If you trust that source, that individual, you stick with it, period.
Yeah.
You stick with it. Even if the agent or somebody is coming and saying something otherwise, you report what they're saying, you document it, because now they are a part of the news, but you stick by your reporting. I don't think some stuck by their reporting. And so it doesn't look like they really trusted their source, or it looks like they really didn't have a source.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They're the people that look the worst in it, though, to me, because it's either if you get it, if you're reporting it, stick by it until it gets proven 100% wrong.
That's it. Yeah. Take the heat. I mean, Sam Amick, he's stuck in it.
Yeah.
I think Zach Lowe,
he's stuck in it.
Yeah.
Were we nervous as hell? Probably so.
Yeah.
But we stuck with it. We trusted it, and that was it, man. So it was, man, that was.
And so you're just sitting in a Chicago airport through my.
So check this out. So I follow the Tribune, the Players Tribune. I follow them, put them on instant notification. I have my Hulkster picture ready. So as soon as I saw it, I saw the instant notification, and it said, "Thank you, Utah." And that was the headline.
Yeah.
I still don't know what that means. "Thank you, Utah" can mean he's going back. So hurry up, quick, go into it. Forget all the blah, 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 because he left the real important stuff way at the bottom.
He buried the lead. Yeah.
So I'm skimming, hurry up. Boom, I'm going to Boston. Boom, okay, hurry up and get to that picture. Find that picture. No caption needed. Tweet. Bam.
Was that your single most retweeted thing ever? Number one tweet in your life?
Nah, I mean, that Gordon Hayward tweet.
Yeah. So Hayward was one, and then the wrestling was two?
I had some other ones past that, but I didn't expect
that
picture.
That's a great 4th of July, man.
No, I didn't expect that picture to blow up like that, man. That just shows you how many people were following.
That's the thing is, you're a character in it.
That's my next question is, over the last few years, there's been like this mythology surrounding scoops on like the NBA internet. Like, you see it now. Like, anytime Shams reports something, people are in his mentions with like photoshops of him dunking on Woj and shit. And like, so is this weird to you to be part of that world? Like,
you're always taught, like,
I'm just not sure how this started.
To part of that world, I mean, you're always taught, you know, not to be a part of the news.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's kind of, you know, it's going to happen. Like, they do look at us as characters, you know, in these episodes. And so, look, man, I understood that before I hit send, that I had the potential to take. But another thing, you know, guys, about news breaking too, like, there's a lot of guys in our business who have the information.
Yeah.
They got it. But there's another thing to have the balls to go out there and press that send button.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it takes, you got to be willing to take some heat sometimes. Like, sometimes, because if you break the story, somebody's not going to be happy.
Yeah.
Either it's going to be the team side, it may be the player side, it may be the family. You're going to take heat from somewhere. You got to be willing to put yourself out there and take it.
Yeah. So do you enjoy the drama of it?
Hell yeah.
Because, I mean,
you like getting yelled at too,
hell
right?
Yeah, man. Like, man, for sure, man. I'm petty as hell. Like, I went back and
Draymond over here.
I went back and I'm liking all those tweets that people were saying, "Oh, you didn't scoop nothing. You ain't got nothing. Leave the scoop to somebody else."
People were getting really personal.
Look at my likes. Look at my likes. I'm going back, liking their tweets, letting them know I'm petty. I go to search. I go to Twitter search. I put my name in. I'm seeing what y'all talking about. You talking that BS. I'm liking it to let you know I'm watching. Some of you media members taking those shots. Do it to me. Do it to me in my face. Talk to me in my face about it.
This is great. You guys, so he's got a hit list, everyone.
It was a triumphant.
Because you know what? The thing about it was, it's like, if this was somebody else reported that, would they have taken that heat?
Well, I wanted to ask you about that, because there are certain guys who it seems like they're unquestioned no matter what. And I think in that situation, had all the confirming reports stuck, you're not getting any of that here. So it was just an unusual situation. But I don't know if you saw Jabari from San Antonio. He tweeted out recently. He said something along the lines of, there are certain front offices, coaches, or people in the league who don't want to talk to black reporters. Do you feel that is true, number one? And then do you feel that some of the credibility questions that people throw your way, they're doing it because of that, because of race?
Because of race. I don't know if it's because of race. Look, we got a guy in this industry who's, you can't touch.
Yeah.
That's Woj. You can't touch him. He's the best in our business, probably the best that this business has ever seen. So, am I on his level? No, I'm not. Am I going to get mine? Hell yeah. Am I going to stop trying to get mine? Hell no. So when you come at me like that, I do got a question, like, why? Because I think my track record speaks for itself.
Yeah.
I think I've been pretty consistent over my news breaking. Why am I getting hit with all these, you know, profanity-laced tirades on Twitter?
Oh,
questioning
it got kind of ugly for an hour or two.
It was some straight bullshit. But to Jabari's point, look, man, look, I love the people in this league. I got great friends, great sources in this league of all color. Is race a factor in some of it? Yes, it is. Does Jabari have a point with some of it? Yes, he does. You know, we don't make any less calls or try any less hard than anybody else out there. And so, to a certain extent, he does have a point. But I'm a grinder, man. And even if the odds are stacked against me, I'm going to keep grinding. And that's just been my motto, man. Am I going to break the amount of stories of regularity like, you know, some of the top guys we have? No. Do I feel like I'm one of the top guys in the league? Yes, I do.
Yeah, do you think, I mean, because reading you, you've done more than just break stories. So that's not like strictly your lane. Yeah. So
that's your favorite thing, though.
It's fun. I mean, I get a high. I ain't never took drugs before, but I would imagine that's what drugs feel like. It's like once you get that high, but then the next thing is like, okay, you break the Gordon Hayward. Now it's like, what's the next one?
Yeah.
You're only as relevant as your latest.
Yeah, now you're hooked.
Yeah, it's like boom, boom, man. But
is your entry into weird Photoshop shams Twitter.
let me ask you this. Like, as you're sitting there stressed out, and I joked to you yesterday, it's like...
Hold on, I wouldn't say stressed out, Ben.
Okay, just...
I wouldn't say stressed out. It was... You were just...
Anxious?
Yeah, you were anxious because you want to get it over with.
Yeah.
You want to get over. Like, when are they going to do it? Are they going to wait till the next day? Because the longer it plays out, the longer this episode is, and then, you know...
Well, that's the thing. The longer they waited, the more they could make it look like the decision hadn't been made.
And I will say...
Which would be really
obnoxious. I will say this. If I'm on the other end, if I'm on that camp, I'm making them wait. Yeah. Like, I thought that was going to be the case. But at the same time, I don't know if they have a job to be respectful for the other guys, but there's other guys... players' camps that's waiting for
there's
this
teams,
domino to fall.
Yeah.
They need this domino to fall so they can move on. So it was kind of put a halt to free agency for a minute.
So I think when DeAndre did his back and forth a couple years ago, there was this whole thing of like, okay, guys will change their minds. And some of the reporting that came out right after with Hayward was like, oh, he's just changed his mind 5 times in the same day. When you hear that and you know like the amount of money that's at stake here, the length of the contract, how big of a star he is, and how long these guys have been preparing for this whole thing, you know, and the whispers you had already been hearing. What did you make of those reports of like, oh, he's changing his mind? I mean.
I didn't take, man. It wasn't reality to me. Yeah. Like, for real. Like, I didn't. All these things were surfacing after the fact, after my report. And I just, man, to me, it was bull.
Yeah.
So, like I said it on SportsCenter that morning. I'm hearing Boston Celtics feel really good about their chances of getting him. So I was already trying to let the public know that, look, it might be leaning this way. And then Boston later, Jody in Utah did an excellent story.
Yeah, he did.
With Boston. And Boston kind of revealed to him that the morning of 4th of July, he was leaning. Yeah, he was leaning. Yeah, and so
it added up.
Yeah, it added up. Yeah. And so I don't get the back and forth, blah, blah, blah. You know, once I just needed one more, I just talked to numerous people, I needed one more clear-cut source. And that call came in that afternoon. And I went with it. Man.
Okay, so here, I'm going to get up on my high horse because I'm kind of anti-Players Tribune. I'm not a big fan of how they do this. I mean, it seems like you're kind of making a deal with the devil with them where your decision to how you look, it's tied up in their production, and they're a relatively new organization. So with KD, the letter comes out, it's not super in detail, and people in Oklahoma City feel burned. Yes, they were going to feel burned anyways because he's leaving, but they don't really get that message that they wanted. The Utah fans are also sad and kind of feeling burned, but Hayward clearly put a lot of time into what his message was going to be to them. I mean, as you said, he buried the news halfway through this long essay about how much he loves them. And so again, both times, the Players Tribune is kind of in the middle of this and maybe not helping the athletes in the way that the athletes would hope they would be. I guess what I'm saying is, I mean, you know, a lot of agents and sort of what goes through their thought process in terms of breaking news. If you had to, if you were an agent or if you were giving advice to one of these, you know, bigger athletes, how would you tell them to break their news in this kind of a situation? Like, are they helping themselves with the Players Tribune, or what would be the best way to do this if you're talking about a star player with a real big announcement?
That's a good question. Look, obviously, I think a lot of...
Should just give it to you, right?
Text me.
Easy.
You can tweet out yourself.
Dumb question.
I'll take it. No, I mean, I'm conflicted on that, Ben, because I get why they go to the Tribune and they want to tell their story, but they can do it through media. And also, you mentioned it, there is this stigma of... the Players Tribune paying players
to
do this. So are they really sincere in going to the Tribune because they felt like that gives them the best platform to get their message across in a genuine way? Or are they doing it because they feel they can do that and get paid?
Yeah.
So I don't know. And like I said, I don't have any confirmed facts, but I've heard that stuff on the pay-in aspect. But man, I don't know, Ben. Look, I think for us as reporters, obviously we'll like to get the stories and do that. But I'm kind of conflicted on it.
What bugs me, because I'm like half writer, half fan, and so I look at it and it just doesn't feel as credible when it's a first person Players Tribune essay. And I mean, it's no shots at them; they do a good job at like what they do. But my eyes kind of glaze over when they, like, I would prefer like a Q&A or something.
Yeah, well, yeah. If we knew for 100% sure that they're writing this on their own,
yeah, exactly.
They thought, we don't know. And first of all, it's not.
They're not.
Let me put that out there. They're not. Quit being misled, people. That's not the case.
Yeah.
But if we knew for sure, like a Q&A or something like that, or a Q&A to where. Because now you can do a Q&A and have somebody else ghostwriting your tweets.
Yeah. Right.
Like a visual, Facebook Live something.
Yeah. Like uninterrupted.
Uninterrupted, is, yeah. Doing, you know, something like that. That's when you know, okay, this dude's genuine, he's coming out from the heart. Yeah. But look, I don't blame Hayward. Like, he's not at fault here to me. I know Ben's been hard on Ben, but I heard his last pod. He said this is worse than DeAndre. Yeah. I disagree with that.
I couldn't believe you said
that. I totally disagree with that. Like, he can't control the leak. The leak came out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I can't blame him for that.
He was in a tough spot. At that point, like, he was in a no-win situation. Utah was pissed off. Celtics.
I can't blame him. One thing I feel for Jazz fans, because my report goes out, Jazz fans are crushed.
Right.
The agent comes out later on, talks to every media member.
Gets their hopes up.
Now, okay, he's not done. Chris, you effing liar, you blah, blah, blah. Then 4 hours later, in 2,100 words, now they got to see that it's back to, you know, back to square one. And then, so they was crushed twice in a 4 or 5 hour span. So I feel for them.
Yeah, that's why I thought it was worse, to be honest. But we don't need to relitigate that part. Here's my question for you, because who you're coming down on, I hear, is the people, the media people, who are taking shots at you, who theoretically are your competitors, and in real time, they're basically criticizing you for not necessarily having made a mistake. Like, you didn't necessarily do anything wrong until they refute your report, like actually come out and say you were lying or whatever. You didn't do anything wrong. For those people, I guess, give me your message to them in terms of, like, what are you trying to say to them? I mean, do you think that agents, players, and other people within the industry see what they're doing and look down on it in the same way that you do? In other words, do you think your sources are seeing people take shots at you and being like, well, I'm never going to work with this guy. This is kind of unethical or across the lines.
I don't know if it'd get to that point, because this has been going on in our business forever.
Yeah.
Me personally, I only could speak from my own personal standpoint. I don't do it, period. Yeah. I don't do it.
Unless you have information that contradicts it or something like that.
Unless you have that. But you know, a lot of these reporters felt they did have the information.
Oh, I see.
You know what I mean? So they felt that. So that's fine. But I, like, look, man, it's going to come to light regardless. You know, so I'm not. My thing is breaking stories.
Last question before I want to talk about your time with the Warriors for a few minutes. But how long did it take you before you could weed out bullshit from sources? Like, because I feel like you probably hear a lot of sort of half-baked stuff. And like, had Borlstein reached out to you, he would have been saying, no, we're
yeah. Because by the way, Chris, just to let you know, the banana boat is going to San Antonio next year. I'm trying to speak it into existence, like LeVar Ball. I want LeBron in San Antonio. I want Chris Paul in San Antonio. I want D Wade and I want Melo. Yeah. All of them. They're all going there. Just FYI, that's a league source telling you that.
So, like, what percentage of stuff do you hear where you have to be like, nope, not gonna put much stock in that?
Well, not so much now.
Okay.
When you're first starting off, people throw everything at you because they want to see what, you know, just throw it at the wall, see if it sticks. And I did, you know, when you're so aggressive and you're trying to get to know people, you do take some stuff. And I made some mistakes early on. I think a lot of people have, because you got to build that trust and see what people are about, see what the motives are. Not to this point now, because you know, especially now I'm at ESPN, like it's going to, whatever I report is going to blow up big.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, and I'm at the point now, like, check this out, I'm going to throw this out. So, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to say it.
Take your time. We both lean forward simultaneously.
So, I was promised this story. No. I was promised this story, and I didn't get it, right? And so, the person that promised me this story heard me say something that was kind of critical of his client. And that, remember, that person didn't call me for 2 weeks, didn't answer my phone calls, nothing. I said something critical about this person on air somewhere. And immediately, within 2 minutes of me saying this on air, remember, I said this critical. I wasn't trying to get paid back. But within 2 minutes, that person hits me up. What are you doing? It's like that now? Yeah. My immediate response was, oh, you calling me now? Now you want to hit me up?
Yeah.
Now you can get in touch with me now?
Yeah.
There's a lot of trade-offs, right? I mean, you're constantly making these mental trade-offs, right? Where it's like you can either be honest or you can have the news. And it seems to me like in your situation, like there's probably times where like you're reporting a deal that probably in your heart you think this is not a good deal for the team, right? Or like maybe this player is like they settled for money. Like either way, but you're in a situation where you can't come out and give your opinion on it. You can't editorialize on that contract because you're reporting the news of that contract.
Correct.
And if you did, you wouldn't get that client's or that agent's next offer or next deal, right?
But when you go on like radio interviews, podcasts, and on TV, they do ask you for your analysis on certain things. And that's when you can step into analyst mode.
And but you have to be careful though.
Yeah, you gotta be careful, but
because people are always listening. I think that's the point of your story. Is like there's people out there who are sort of like, well, you know, Chris does wrong by me. There's some other reporter I can feed the next time around.
And right? Anyone listening to this podcast, just go back through like 20 hours of Chris Haynes' takes for the last 3 months, trying to decode who we're talking about.
That's it. But you know, just don't. I'm at to the point, man. I ain't trying to like. Don't lie to me, man. Like people know, like. You can either tell me, like, look, Chris, sorry, I want to help you, but I can't. I'm sorry, you got to go somewhere else. Fine, I'll move on. But when you mislead me or when you lie to me, we got a problem.
Yeah.
We got a problem because I'm going out there on air or on Twitter or whatever.
Exactly.
And I'm saying this, you're making me look bad.
Yeah.
And I know we're not supposed to be revealing our sources and everything, but I'm telling you right now, man, you lie to me. Put me out to shame. I might reveal your ass.
That's a threat.
Exactly.
That's a threat straight from Chris B. Haynes on the Open Floor podcast. This is great.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris, you mentioned getting things wrong before. Maybe you don't want to talk about specifics, but give us an idea of like how somebody can try to manipulate a reporter. I mean, this is obviously sort of like inside baseball, you know, kind of backstory type stuff, but give us an example of where someone might like, what are they throwing at you or why might they throw something that's incorrect at you? Just, you know, obviously what their goal probably is to get you to tweet it so it's on Hoops Hype so everybody sees it, right?
Exactly. An example may be, say there's an intense negotiations, right? And they may leak to a young reporter, hey, say this guy is about to meet with this such and such team.
Yeah.
Hoping that maybe the team that they really want to go to is saying like, damn, we can't let them meet with that guy. Let's lock them up.
Yeah.
When they probably really know real intentions of meeting with that team. Stuff, things like that.
Yeah.
And then the team that you put out there that's saying that they're going to meet, they're like hitting you up like, hold on, man, we ain't got no scheduled meeting with this dude.
We have no idea who this guy is.
What are you talking about? Like, he's not really on our radar. It's not on the agenda. And that hurts your credibility.
Yeah.
That hurts your credibility. And while you may be doing somebody a favor, and you may not think you're doing them a favor, you think that's the gospel. You're hurting yourself internally with everybody else.
Well, that's one of the reasons the offseason has gotten so entertaining over the last like couple years, is because for smart basketball fans who actually pay attention to this, you can kind of read what's being leaked, and like maybe they're leaking so that this team does this team does that. It's like a movie and shit. Like, they're basically like,
you can
throw that information out there.
You can kind of like fact check and corroborate almost in real time. And so I think, I don't know, maybe you would agree or not, but do you think it's gotten cleaner actually in the last couple of years, just because it's almost like a machine where some of the kinks have gotten worked out, or no?
cleaner as it was.
Like, what? Less BS. I mean, maybe partly because you've kind of moved up the ladder, but do you think it's gotten crazier because there's more people out there throwing more crazy stuff?
No, I definitely, in that regard, yeah, I agree with you. I think it definitely has gotten a little cleaner. You know, a lot of those just antics just don't work, too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's really...
You can fool somebody once.
Yeah, I mean, and then people can see right through it. Like, they can see, like, you're being used, and that's the whole thing. Like, young reporters get used a lot because they're willing to just throw things out there to try to get their name on Hoops Hype or ESPN or whatever. And sometimes it may be accurate.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know.
Well, and a lot of times, like, if you're a 24-year-old reporter and a person from an NBA team is texting you, you're like, well, this is official. This is an exclusive.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw it out there. Like,
yeah.
It's harder. You kind of have to learn how to read things a little bit. But
I'm going to say this. I'm going to put this out there. Neil O'Shea with the Blazers. That was out. Neil came on when I was probably in my second year in the business. I was a loose cannon. I'm not going to lie. Like, I was a loose cannon. Like,
you were pretty aggressive.
I was aggressive. Neil was like, hold on, man. Hold on, man. Like, dude, you're wrong here. This is not accurate. Dude, you got to get this right. You can't just be putting blah, blah, blah. Me and Neil would get at it. Me and Neil would get it. Like, me and him would go toe-to-toe during the 2 or 3 years I was there.
And it was tough because, for people who don't know, you're working for the TV station that's officially
for
the Blazers. So, like, you're not employed by the Blazers, but there's an indirect relationship there where, like, they have expectations that you're a partner, not an outside media member.
Correct. And then the truth about it was, like, he was right. I was wrong on some things. Like, some things I was just, you know, the old regime didn't do checks and balances like that.
Right.
You know, Neil held you accountable. And that's one thing I respected about him. Like, we fought. We had it. We had at it. But he let you know, man, like, yeah, I'm watching. Like, let's get it right. I don't mind you. And that's one thing I will respect about him. Like, he didn't mind me breaking stories or getting it out there, but let's make sure it's accurate. Let's make sure it's legit. So he really helped me, like, hone in and zero in on, like, okay, don't get used from over here.
Yeah.
Like, let's be...
Have a filter.
Yeah, have a filter. Don't do that. And that's what, I think from that point on, that's when my career started to take off. Now, I'm under that umbrella, that Comcast Blazer umbrella. I still felt like there were some things that I just couldn't report.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though it was accurate. That's why I felt like I had to expand my wings, move out. But that was good. But Neil, like I said, we went back and forth at it, man. We used to have some heated arguments, man, like real talk. And he'll tell you. Now, I never told anybody that, but one thing he did was hold me accountable, and that helped me through my career.
Oh, I can tell everybody. I've gotten some angry text messages from Chris venting after his 15-round bouts with Neil Olshay. Yeah.
Well, so you talk about spreading your wings. I mean, what was it like being with the Warriors this year? This was your first year
at
Golden State?
Compare it to Cleveland, too, because, like, you saw a title in Cleveland and a title in Golden State. So.
Yeah. People think it was LeBron that led them to a title or KD that led the Warriors to a title.
It was you.
Come on, look at the common denominator, man. But it was different. Like, Cleveland was a special thing to cover because that was LeBron coming back.
Yeah.
The parade was just crazy.
I mean, it was like, one of the craziest stories I've ever seen.
It was ridiculous. I mean, coming back from 3-1, it was ridiculous, man. Like, and being able to document every single thing, it was that was pretty special. That was a special moment in my career. And if I didn't take that jump to go to cover the Cavaliers, because I love Portland, I love it, but I was in a bubble.
Yeah.
You know, I was breaking league-wide stuff in Portland.
You were Gordon Hayward, man. You had to get up to you had to get up to a platform. We understand, man. We know how it goes.
You know, I had to expand a little bit, man. And if I didn't go to Cleveland, I'm probably not at ESPN right now. And then that's what opened the door for ESPN to see me. Because now the stories you're breaking, Cleveland-related, LeBron-related, is showing up on ESPN. And that was my thing. I wanted to make ESPN credit me.
Right.
As much as possible, on the bottom line, and on their talk shows, as much as possible, to get to a point where, like, damn, why we keep crediting this dude? Why he ain't on our salary? And we could that's what I wanted to do. And when I interviewed with him, I was like, man, I was trying to make life hell for you guys. And it was like, you did to a certain extent. We got to give it to you. And so that helped me. And then we going to Golden State, I just realized there was different ways of championship teams going about handling their business. LeBron in Cleveland likes to have all of his players hang out off the court, like all together at once, like at one. But it's dinners, bowling, whatever. That's how he felt, you know, that's how he felt, you know, that's the best way he felt of getting the best out of his teammates on and off the court. Golden State, there's a bunch of cliques.
Right.
And they go about things differently. And obviously they have success in doing it. So that's two things that I've seen of different contrasts that still equals to success.
Is Draymond the best athlete you've ever covered? Just period.
He is the man. God, I told Dre that. Like, dude, you are gold. Like,
and given like the brutal honesty coming from your side of the table on this podcast, I feel like you guys could probably like connect.
But me and Draymond got into it a couple times.
Yeah,
like, shocking. Well, that's
how he expresses his love.
Me and Draymond got into it a couple times, and I love Dre.
Let's hear one of the fights. Like, what do you guys argue over?
All right, you remember the Utah nightlife story?
Oh, uh-huh. Yeah, that was a classic.
That was like one of the highlights of the playoffs.
Yeah, so they got mad at how I framed it and blah, blah, blah. Draymond went at me, was like, you know, I'm being a distraction to the team. And that's one thing, I think certain markets don't get. Like, I think certain markets, like, really coddle to the players.
Yeah.
To the fact where the players think that, you know, they can't be critical or they can't do something. Like, I don't, man, whatever. I'm going to do me regardless, man. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to BS. But that was a funny story, man. I thought it was lighthearted.
That's awesome.
I thought it was lighthearted. I didn't think it was a distraction. Clearly it wasn't. They swept them. But, you know, things like that. It's like little things that may cause, I don't even consider it controversy, but little things that cause headlines that's not strictly on basketball, I think players feel like you're doing them a disservice or something, or you're not with them. And what I blame with that, I blame some of the media members who just try to be best friends with all these players all the time. I mean, do your job. We're here to do a job, not here to cozy to everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I'm struck by how honest some of the Warriors are, considering how many people like cover those guys on a daily basis. Like, last summer I was here and I talked to a reporter. And he said he was going out and moving out to cover the Warriors. I was like, man, that's a great idea. Then there were like 10 or 15 guys who did that.
Yeah.
And like, I can't imagine being in that bubble. And those guys still talk pretty honestly with you. Like, you would do one-on-ones with KD and everybody.
Yeah, KD was good, man. I was surprised. The KD, you know, I covered him from afar. And, you know, the sound bites you did see was him attacking the media. You know what I mean? Y'all stick to y'all, blah, blah, blah.
You can blame me for that one. I was going at him at All-Star Weekend one time, so that's all my fault.
Is that
fault.
Right?
Well, it wasn't.
It's always your fault.
Yeah, okay.
Hating ass Golliver, man.
Like, but
Tiger can't change its stripes.
KD was real, man. Like, he was one of the best guys already I've ever covered, man. Damian Lillard, LeBron, KD, Draymond, Iguodala, like Steph, CJ, Matthew, Will Barton. There's guys, man, that's just real genuine, man. And I had a blast covering those guys, man. And the thing about it is, like, it's okay to have a couple verbal squabbles throughout the season. You're
healthy.
Around them all the time. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's cool. You know, some people take shots at them and don't even come in the locker room. Yeah. I'm coming in the locker room. You know, you gonna see me. I'm gonna give you the chance to come at me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think the Warriors PR does a great job of allowing us to have that verbal combat sometimes.
Well, it's also a workplace. So, like, the people you work with, you're going to have disagreements. And if people aren't bullshitting each other, then, yeah, you're going to get in people's faces every now and then. And that's healthy.
I'm just picturing Chris and Draymond, like, fighting over the last sandwich in, like, the work refrigerator or something like that. No, but you're...
But Draymond, like, let me tell you about Draymond. Like, all year, Dre got on my clothing, my attire, all year. And I admit, like, I'm not the best dressed person. My wife, she buys all my stuff. And
hey, don't say that.
But she, no, she does.
Don't throw her under the bus.
Well, she does it, but she's not the best at, like, finding the right fit, if you know what I mean.
I'm not co-signing this.
Okay.
Hey, I know she's going to listen. You do an unbelievable job picking out Chris's clothes.
But if there's something wrong with my shoes, attire, Draymond's the first to let me know. and he got on me every year. He gets like in front of everybody. He's like, dude, what are you wearing? What is this? Your shorts? What are you doing? Your shirt? You can't wear that shirt. Like it was one time. Check this out. KD has a habit. Like when he didn't play, he'll wear a sports coat over a V-neck white T-shirt.
Yeah.
And I looked at that. I'm like, man, that's still casual, but it's still professional. I'm gonna do that. So I tried that the very next day, right? Walked in the locker room, felt like I'm doing something. Draymond was like, "What, dude? What you doing?" He was like, "Dude," I'm like, "Man, this." I said, "Why are you getting on me?" KD wore this the other day. He said, "Dog, KD had a designer V-neck T-shirt. You can't buy these five shirts for $5 and think you're gonna wear that with a sports coat." And it was. It was one of those V-neck shirts. The Hanes shirt, you get like five for a dollar.
Of course it's a Hanes shirt.
Yeah, it's crazy. And so I learned, like, okay, there's quality to it. Like, there's certain, you can't just do this. And then he was like, Draymond, he was like, look, you're hurting the black culture so bad with your attire. He said, look, go to Nordstrom's Rack, because I wear size 15s. And my shoes, my shoes look just hella big when I'm walking. Yeah. Like, it looks hella big for only being 6'2".
Right.
He's like, go to Nordstrom Rack, get you some nice shoes that fit. You can buy some nice, affordable, quality shoes there. Trust me. I went to Nordstrom Rack. He was right. I bought about three pair of shoes, some dress shoes, and spruced up my attire. Ever since then, he was like, cool. You cool. He ain't never got on me about that. He'll get on you on some other stuff, but it hasn't been on attire the last couple months.
This is amazing because Draymond has a stylist, and you have a stylist, and it's Draymond. I mean, it's just full circle. It works perfect.
But the thing is, I benefit from it because he's paying thousands and thousands of stylists. I ain't paying Draymond nothing.
You just get the free criticism.
I just got to take the hits. But you're strong enough to take the hits and make improvements, and that's what I do.
Well, so on this Golden State Warriors thing, and we'll wrap up here pretty soon, but how long do you think this is going on? Because we've been over here talking dynasty about them for probably since the finals. When they really solidified it, KD rose up, took on LeBron, kind of showed he was the guy this year. They bring everybody back. It's like super orderly. You know, it's just like one contract after another, like a machine. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Cleveland's over here struggling. Are we going to hire a GM? You know, are we going to pay Chauncey or lowball him? When you kind of compare structurally the Cavaliers to the Warriors, because that's still the two top teams, I think, in the league, what's going to stop the Warriors? Like, do you see this stopping anytime soon, or are we just going to pencil them in for, like, three more titles?
Man, I don't know three more titles, but I think they're going to be the favorites for the next 2 or 3 years. Look, KD taking that massive pay cut was to help the Warriors out. And in doing so, a lot of players wouldn't do this, but in doing so, he helped the owners out. They're going to save about $20 million in luxury tax alone by KD taking that pay cut. Who in the hell does that to help the owners out?
Why did he do it?
He does it because he wants to keep this thing intact.
Yeah.
It's like 2 years from now, when Draymond and Klay become free agents, how can they really go and chase money elsewhere?
It's pressure, right?
Yeah, it's for real. Like, how can they go? Like, KD is showing, like, man, I'm all about team, dog. Like, I'm willing to do what it takes to, you know, keep this thing afloat. We got something special. I remember talking to Draymond about this. He was like, man, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, I want people to talk about us still.
Yeah.
And they're on the verge of doing that.
Yeah, there's also pressure on the ownership, too, because those guys got to cut checks, too.
They got to cut the checks in. And I told KD this. I'm like, you know, usually owners will do what's right for themselves. And they look out for themselves. So maybe this is a different group. Maybe they are genuine and they're going to look out after these guys, because it's going to get to a point where these players' skills decline.
Yeah.
How would they be treated then?
Well, and it's also the luxury tax checks are going to get pretty big. Mm-hmm. So, like, when you're writing a $50 million, $75 million check, I don't see them doing that for more than a year or two before changes are made.
Possibly. Possibly, you know, you're probably right, but I've never really seen anybody, you know, players in their 28, 29.
No, man, it's crazy.
They ain't taking pay cuts like that, man.
Okay. We're almost out of time.
But
I just.
Where are we at right now?
50 minutes. How many minutes you got?
Okay. Yeah, I'm here, man.
Okay. Okay, great. Then let's dig into my other favorite topic that I really got to just probe your mind about. David Blatt. So this is a flashback to your early Cleveland days. So you're there on the ground, and there's a pretty good beat group there in Cleveland.
Great group.
And I didn't cover that team at all until the playoffs. So I showed up just in time basically for LeBron's playoff punking of David Blatt when he basically said he chucked David Blatt's play call into the trash can.
Oh.
But as soon as I got there, man, even before that confrontation, I could just sense that everybody did that. Blatt just grated on people, right? Can you just explain why your first impressions of him, how the season was when he was there, and then once they did make the decision to fire him, did it surprise you? I mean, just summarize that Blatt era from your perspective.
When he first came on, first of all, I like David Blatt. Like, I was probably out of the regular media contingent that followed that team on a day-to-day basis. I'm talking about, you know, Jason Lloyd, Joe Vaart, and Dave McMiniman. I was probably the one that liked him the most.
Why?
He was humor, man. Like, he was a joke. Like, he cracked jokes all the time, and I guess I was the only one that got his humor.
Yeah. But I don't think many of the players were laughing.
Yeah, no, they wasn't feeling him, obviously. But I think he came on, like, it ain't thing. He came on, he wanted people to automatically have this respect and reverence towards him and what he did overseas. They wanted you to respect his resume. I remember, this is when I knew it was, like, really serious, and this guy was probably, like, didn't get it. You guys probably remember. We're in San Antonio. I think it's the regular – yeah, it was the regular season. After the game, we're asking Blatt something about championships. He says something. Look, championships. I've won such and such back home. This is nothing to me. Something like that. And that's when it really hit, like, damn, this dude, like, really thinks what he's done over there is on par – with the resume of a Greg Popovich, a Pat Riley, a Phil Jackson.
Yeah.
He really thought that.
Yeah.
And that's where he didn't connect. So he came off as arrogant.
Yeah.
He was dismissive. He would cut reporters off, kind of have some snarky retorts back at them.
Kind of a know-it-all.
Yeah, know-it-all. And it didn't, like, you didn't have the respect to do that. Popovich, he can do that and get away with it because he has a resume.
Yeah.
You respect Pop. You respect him as a person and his resume. I think most people respect him as Blatt as a person, but they didn't respect his resume, so you didn't get the benefit of the doubt. So now you're getting ripped off of every single miscue that you have. And that Chicago series
was the best.
Oh, that was
that was the best.
That was unparalleled. I've never seen anything like that. And you can just tell LeBron had it planned. He was, because it was unprompted. Well, we didn't ask Bron.
Walk me through it.
We didn't ask him.
I can't really
remember. We asked him about that. We just asked him about the play. Like,
yeah,
about that game winner.
This was the game winner.
And instead of him talking about the game winner, the play, he said, you know what, let me tell you. Initially, David Blatt drew it up for somebody else. No, hold on. Let me walk it back, because it's all coming back to me. It was like 0.5 tenths of a second left.
Yeah.
He said David Blatt had it designed for me to take the ball out.
Yeah.
And he said, I scratched it.
I'm
not taking the ball out. I'm going to be the one to take the shot. Screw it.
Yeah.
And then what happens? He goes out, hits the game winner. I think the play was designed, I can't remember, but I think the play was initially designed for, it was J.R. Smith or Dellavedova, something like that. And I was just thinking, I've never heard of a player come out and said, like...
And like you said, it was planned.
It was planned. We didn't ask him about that. Yeah. Nobody knew about that.
Yeah, it was just like, hey, tell us about your great shot, you know?
He's
like, by the way.
this is what he was saying. This is essentially what he was saying. Do you fools know what he tried to make me do?
Tel Aviv Popovich.
He tried to have me, LeBron James, inbound the ball, which meant 5 tenths of a second, which meant I'm not going to be the one to take the shot.
Yeah.
I was like, hell no. I'm taking that shot. I'm doing this. F what you doing.
Yeah.
Draw this play. Deli, you get over here. You get right there. And that's what happened.
And the best part about it was that was coming after months of who's the real coach of the Cavs, you know? Like,
it was all that play.
And it's just like, the Emperor has no clothes. We're just going to completely undress Blatt here.
My whole problem with how that went down and firing them was like, they should have did it in the offseason.
Yeah.
Period. They should have did it in the offseason. It really didn't make sense at all. They were just like, well, David Griffin, I love Griffin, that's my guy. They was like, ownership felt like the players just weren't sinking in to Blatt. First of all, they weren't sinking into him the first week of the season.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't have a grasp of him. But LeBron James, that team was so talented that they can just go off and you know, went off, you know, get a string of games.
They were just hoping to kind of drag it out and maybe things will turn around. Everybody will finally kind of meet in the middle. But he never really got their respect, it seemed like.
He never, because he went at guys wrong. Like, when you go, like, you got to earn LeBron's respect. Yeah. Like, LeBron, this is how LeBron is, because he did it with me. He's going to fill you out for a little bit.
Yeah.
Fill you out, see what you're about, see what your motive's about.
Test you out. Yeah.
Then once he figures out, he leaves you alone. He ain't going to mess with you.
Yeah.
I think to a similar state, he did that with Black. So let me give him a training camp. Let me see what's in his mind.
Yeah.
Let me see if he actually knows what he's talking about. And I think he figured him out and figured out, hey, this guy don't know more than me. Forget it.
Yeah, that's all what I've always thought. It's like Blatt come in and thinking that Israel counts for a lot. Like, that's one thing when it's the media or fans, you know, trying for the respect. But you think LeBron, if he played in the Israeli league, well, I mean, what's he going to average? Like 75 points, 20 rebounds, and like 15 assists? Yeah. Like, why would he possibly care at all?
Yeah. All of this is why he's going to go play for the real Popovich.
Yes, exactly. Spurs banana.
It's all building to that. All right, I have one more question for you before we go. You had a big 4th of July. Big milestone career-wise. I mean, you were the biggest story in sports for about 8 hours. Is there any part of you that looks back with regret and says, man, I could have been in China with Klay Thompson for 2 weeks?
You saw him in the club dancing.
You could have been daily reporting with him.
Oh, man. No, I mean, this is what I do, man. This is what I do. I mean, you got to step your foot in the fire sometimes and breaking stories, like I said, sometimes you got to figure out other avenues to penetrate a certain circle. And I did that, and it was worth it, man. I took some heat, but it was worth it. And the one thing I will say, my company stood by me. My boss, Mary Burns, she was, man, right there with me, man. Like, I appreciate her for that. And she was the boss when Sam Amick went through the same thing a couple years ago with Dwight Howard.
Yeah, that was the one parallel. Because Dwight was on a flight
exactly,
to LA.
Exactly. Same situation happened. People were refuting it, blah, blah, blah. And so I talked to Sam about it. She was there for it. She was there for me. I appreciate that. I appreciate, you know, my company sticking by me. And that was that. It was a wrap.
Well, hey, I'm glad it worked out. Thank you for reuniting with Golliver.
Yeah, thanks for coming on and telling everybody how great I was for your career, helping you out. No,
this was fun, man.
Yeah, if there's anything else you want to get off your chest, because you're fired up right now. I mean, people can't see you, but you look like you're ready to go play, and you used to play, by the way.
I did. Last couple of years, not so much. Gained 20 pounds over the last couple of years. You lost about 20 pounds.
I tried, but I never scored on Will Barton on video. That's your highlight of your career, right?
It used to be.
until Hayward. Until you swept Hayward. All right, Chris. Thanks very much. Guys, check us out. Open Floor Podcast. 5-star reviews on iTunes. OpenFloorMail@gmail.com for all your questions. Thanks for hanging out in Las Vegas with us, Chris. We'll talk to you.
Appreciate it, guys.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.